Jamie, let's get in the mood for this. Ready?
Okay.
I got a pretty nice voice, don't I?
I love it. It sounds really famous.
Yeah, that was this show, man. This episode was brutal.
Yeah, it was rough. This was a rough episode.
But what a great episode. This might be one of my very favorite ones.
Fantastic, fantastic. It is one of my favorite episodes of the show I've ever seen. Written by a famous playwright, actually. And she's due to write another episode this season. Her name is Tracy Scott Wilson, and she's a playwright and a lecturer at some of our best universities in the country. And she's writing also episode 9 of this season.
The day after. Mm-hmm. No messing around with titles tonight, Jamie.
Oh, God, so awful.
Hey, before we get into this, I had a couple thoughts just about TV in general.
Couple
things I read, and just a couple of shows we've been watching. I'm thinking about like the evolution of the motive of these shows. And are you a Walking Dead fan? Do you watch The Walking Dead?
Yeah. Oh, I haven't seen this season though.
Well, you don't have to have seen this season, but there's an evolution of motive there. Like, it started out, everyone was afraid, like, oh, zombies, I'm afraid of the zombies. But the motive has evolved to be the human conflict. That's really the motive. Now they see zombies walk by in the background. They're like, whatever. They don't even give them a second notice.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think in the Americans, Jamie, the spy game. I mean, this is brutally honest. This is like stupidly not honest, but stupidly obvious. It's not the spy game anymore. It's the family. It's the family conflict.
Right.
I think.
Right. I think that's the idea, you know? I think that the spy game is the spice.
Yeah, the spice or the Trojan horse or whatever. It's the way to get us into the ball game.
Yeah.
Also, it's interesting that we know what's going to happen and it's not a problem. I thought about that. Like in Better Call Saul, we know Saul's going to somehow end up in that Cinnabon. Mm-hmm. And in this one, we know the USSR is going to dissolve, and yet we're still fascinated by this story.
Right. You know, because really it is about the people, right? You know, I was. It's funny that you brought up Saul, because I am either blessed or cursed with the terrible obsessive habit of continuing to try to understand an episode of a good television show long after it's aired and long after you and I have discussed it and torn it apart on our podcast. And, you know, I've been thinking about Saul, and, you know, what I've concluded is that I think that what Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould have decided to do is look at human nature. No, because really, really, and we've talked about that show being a character study, and it is, as much as The Americans is, you know, really a character study. It's about the people. It's about the choices that they make, and you know, and what it is in us that causes us to do things that are either very much in our interest and against the interests of those around us, or very much against our interests and in the interest of those around us, even when it's a zero-sum game, you know, as in the instance of what happened to our heroine this episode.
It's also, yeah, and that's a good point, because it's interesting that our favorite shows can end in despair, and yet we remain really satisfied.
Right.
Like, look what happened to Walt, his fall, and it was satisfying to watch his arc. Mm-hmm. And Nina, and now, like, we kind of know that the Soviet Union doesn't make it, at least in the iteration that we're watching on this television show. And yet it's super satisfying to watch this. It's not like, oh, we know what's going to happen. Come on, get on with it. It's really, really engaging to watch this all unravel.
Right. I mean, it's like a set. It's like scenery. It's like other characters. You know, you spoke eloquently about that kind of thing, about scenery and circumstance in episodes of good television being characters. You spoke about that in our last episode, our last podcast about Saul, and you're right. I mean, the Soviet Union is a character in this series.
Right.
You know, it's like a set. It's like a, you know, it's an atmosphere. It's not the story. The story is the people.
So we'll get into our episode here, Jamie, but I wanted to let you know I heard some pretty cool media outside of the episode itself. Andy Greenwald has a really good podcast, and he interviewed Joel, and he talked to them about things that we may have forgotten that we shouldn't forget. And a couple of those things are that Philip, we should not forget, is still meeting with Kimmy every 2 weeks.
What?
The writers confirmed that on this guy's show, that Andy Greenwald's show, that don't forget, we don't show it to you every week, but Philip's still meeting with Kimmy. He has to go in to get that briefcase, the sound file, whatever the recorder is, out of that briefcase every 2 weeks.
Are you kidding me?
No. Also, Elizabeth's still meeting with Lisa, the Northrop employee that we saw with the guy that drank the turpentine or whatever that stuff was in the jar. All that's going on.
Oh, God, I forgot about him. Are we going to see him again?
I have no idea.
We've got to see that dude again.
And you may not even remember this guy, but Philip still meeting with a guy named Charles Duluth, who is a journalist. He came somewhere in the past. He came on, and he was a KGB source and recruited by Philip. Philip's still connecting with him.
I remember that dude. That's the dude who was just like a worker and became disgruntled. And ended up becoming a source.
And Jamie, our pal, the mail robot, couldn't make it tonight. He's going to join us soon. He's going to join us before the season closes, for sure. We're only on number 4. But they reminded us, Joel, the mail robot has some enemies.
Yeah.
And I don't think he means Gad kicking it.
Uh-oh.
I don't know.
That's right. Yes, no, he does. He definitely has enemies. He is bugged. He is bugged right now, and he's listening to everything that's going on around him right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that was a cool little catch up just from in between episodes. I was gonna say that last week, and some of that I forgot and didn't fit it in, but and then just to close out before we go into the episode, Jamie, theory. Let's just theorize a little bit. What? So I put this down before I watched this episode, but I thought, what if Paige does something on her own amateurishly to get her? She thinks it's going to get her out of this mess, but gets her into real legal trouble. Or even if she does something that she gets away with, mm-hmm. and causes her like a long-term emotional turmoil of some sort.
Well, I don't know, but I'll tell you what. I think that Paige has learned her lesson. She is tortured. She is tortured right now.
Or what about Henry? What about Henry protecting Paige? Because remember way back season 1, I think it was, from that park creeper that tried to give them some beer and in yeah. season 1, and Henry got them out of that.
Yeah, you're right.
They didn't put that scene in there just to show that there's creepy guys in parks. I think it was to show us that Henry can step up every now and then, even as a young child.
Yeah, you're right. He's got some badass in him.
It seemed like a dead end, kind of isolated scene in that episode at the time, but who knows? Maybe it's been germinating, and now its time is about to come out.
Maybe.
And then just the final thing, like Glanders, if you play the name game for this episode, chloramphenicol, I got it. I had it written down wrong. That's why it's so damn hard to pronounce the last time I stumbled over it. Chloramphenicol, but... One of the names of the episode was, of course, Glanders was the problem, and now chloramphenicol is the antidote.
Right.
Kind of interesting little bookend there.
Yeah, it is.
All right, Jamie, so let's start. Elizabeth is calling in to cancel the two deliveries.
Yeah.
While William, Dylan Baker, William watches and waits. And the two deliveries are, of course, Tim and his wife not getting bumped off. But it's only a temporarily cancel it, at least in Elizabeth's viewpoint at this point in the episode. And then she calls Paige to ask her to take care of Henry, even though everything's fine. Don't worry, Paige. Everything's fine.
Gosh, you know what? I completely misunderstood what she did.
Yeah, I think those two deliveries were Tim and Alice getting bumped off.
No question.
What do you think they were?
Oh, God, I'm such a doofus. I thought that because they weren't going home, that she was calling to let the center know, like, that they were in some sort of peril and that their two deliveries, Paige and Henry, were, you know, in some sort of, you know, that they couldn't be there to take care of their deliveries. They couldn't be there for the deliveries.
Oh, yeah, she's calling off the hit on the pastor. But the comical part about this is William takes the germy handset and just cuts it and takes it with him in his little germ bag.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Pretty funny.
And I was lost, man. That first scene, I had no clue what was going on.
And we cut to credits and come back, and it's Gabriel. They go back to Gabriel's sick house, and William's making jokes about how it's hilarious. He comes back down to earth a little bit here. He loses his comedian sensibilities and comes down to actually being very serious and concerned in this episode. Then we see Oleg and his papa. They talk about, so one of the other themes in this one, Jamie, is the parenthood, right? Oleg and his father, and we'll get into some other ones, Elizabeth and her mother, and of course the Jennings family and all that. And right. Maybe even, you might even call one another parenthood sketch was Stan and Henry.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing, you're right. You're right. I mean, the whole thing was like parent-child relationships. And I guess, you know, the thing for Nina was that Mother Russia,
yeah,
Mother Russia wasn't going to be a good mother to Nina anymore.
Yeah. Well, Oleg and his papa are talking about their mother being sick, or his Oleg's mother being sick. She's sleeping all the time.
She's sad. She's depressed.
Yeah. You don't think she's dying? She's just depressed?
She's sad because Oleg's brother is dead. He just died a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah, but she's not sick then? She's just depressed?
I think she's sad. I think she's depressed because of her son dying a few weeks ago.
I was drawing too much of a parallel between Elizabeth and her mother in that flashback.
Mm.
But in light of what happened, I thought at the time, I mean, this looks like a relatively good sign for Nina. Somebody's going to help Nina, the big shot papa, the railroad man, whatever he is, transportation minister, is going to help out Oleg and Nina.
Yeah.
But Papa describes her as a simple traitor. I don't know that guy's name. I'm just going to call him Papa.
Hold on a second. I'll give him to you. Keep going.
He seems to feel sorry for Oleg, though. He tells him and admits she's not dead. He could have just as easily let Oleg believe she's dead and, like, Oleg be done with her. She's dead. But he tells him the truth. And Oleg starts his ramping up and asking for help. First thing he does, he asks Papa just to help him find out what happened to her. Later on, he's going to ask to see her and eventually probably ask to save her. But right now, he's just asking to find out what had happened to her.
Igor.
Igor?
Mm-hmm.
That's not a Russian name.
Yes, it is.
Just kidding.
Oh.
All right, now Henry visits.
Okay, wait. Hold on, Mike. That dude's name, his real name, is Boris.
Oh, okay. His name in real life?
Yeah.
Okay.
Another Russian name.
Henry visits Stan to bitch about the Disney Epcot problem or cancellation under the guise of borrowing some milk. And he's asking Stan for help. So he's asking Stan for some fatherly stuff, computer help. Now, Jamie, he asks Stan some more about Miss Beeman, Miss Sandra Beeman.
Oh, would you quit it?
Do you still think he was totally not referring to Sander when he was talking about that science teacher last week?
Yes, I think he was totally not referring. He was only asking about Sander because he needs woman advice.
Well, he's got the hots for Sandra.
He had the hots for his neighbor, but that's normal, right, for a little boy?
Well, yeah, he's got the well, I can't say it, but he's got the porn pack of her in his bedroom.
Come on.
In her underwear or something, or bathing suit.
No, she was wearing shorts. What the heck, dude?
Oh, we didn't see all the pictures.
We saw one picture. That's all there was.
All right. Well, Stan makes a telling comment. Don't you ever ask your dad about this stuff? And Henry says he's never around. Then he tells him about the canceled trip for Epcot because they had to go to New York. And Stan does the nose twitch, Jamie. Stan's got a big time tell, that little rat nose twitch he has. He did it when he was watching Martha last week.
Yeah.
All right, so Stan's suspicious now. He goes over and visits Paige. This is a pretty scary scene. If scenes can be scary with Stan, he scares her. He scares Paige as he grills her.
Yeah, this one wasn't as bad as the one where when she first found out. You know, remember that one? That scene when she first found out about her parents, and then Mr. Beeman came over, and she was all like, it seemed like she was maybe going to tell him or do something really stupid. This scene wasn't as scary as that, but it was very, like, it made me feel nervous.
Well, she knows what's at stake, and I think she did pretty well. But do you think Stan suspected her of covering something up?
Yes, I do. I think that Stan is naturally suspicious. This came up in, I think it was season 2. We talked about Stan and his instincts. He's got very, very, very good instincts. And he picks up things and he knows things kind of, you know, he pulls them out of the air. And I think Stan figures something's up, but he doesn't know what.
He's got that S training. FBI / Est in his background. All right, go back to Gabriel and the team in the sick apartment. Philip, now.
What was that sigh for?
Well, this is deep stuff, man. Elizabeth asks what S says about death.
Oh, yeah.
And Philip says, well, it never came up.
Which was, okay, so this was kind of a funny moment for me. And I don't mean funny, haha. I mean, like, funny, it was an odd moment. Because this is a statement. I mean, like, these writers wrote this scene. I get into that sometimes. Like, you know, when I hear characters speak, the words they say in a scene, you know, being somebody who's keenly aware of words and who tries to use them with intent, you know, I listen to what writers write, and you know, what they said in that scene was really meaningful because they have these people who don't believe in God and who that the other agent, I'm sorry, what's his name? The guy?
Adderall?
William?
William,
who's played by Dylan Baker, does a fantastic job. When William makes that offhand comment about, you know, if we believed in God, I'd tell you to pray. And then Elizabeth is looking really scared and asking, you know, what Est says about death. You know, it kind of puts me in mind of wondering about people who don't really have, you know, a belief system at all. You know, what happens in those moments?
Well, and then Elizabeth asks Gabriel a really intimate question that she tells not Gabriel, but she tells Philip this, that Gabriel told me our people were with my mother when she died and that she loved me. She said she loved me. Paige mm-hmm. knows we love her, right? Mm-hmm. And Philip says, of course, to reassure her, but it's a great question.
Yeah, I was surprised that she didn't say more, but I guess it would not have been appropriate for her to say more in that scene because the scene was about Paige. But I'm like you. I don't think she believed Gabriel.
At the time, I don't think she did either.
Yeah.
Because I think he was lying. And then Elizabeth says, well, we have no choice for with Tim and his wife. I mean, in the multiple swings of pendulum for Pastor Tim, this one is swinging back in his disfavor, that the phone call to save him was only a temporary save, and there's no choice with him. We have to do what we do.
Yeah.
What we're going to do. So, all right, we go to Adderholt and Martha now, Jamie. Adderholt reflects that he never would have suspected Jean. And what are you doing tonight, baby? Let's get together. And why does Martha say yes to this? She says, sure.
I don't know. That was so freaking weird. I guess because she's ostensibly, she's supposed to be single.
Was it to...
why she would say yes.
Was it to jab Clark in the ribs a little bit? Because when she calls him and leaves that message, that was definitely a jab.
Okay, so see, that's what I thought too. But then later, I thought, no, maybe not. Because when they're in the restaurant, and then we see that parallel, you know, of what's happening in her apartment while they're in the restaurant, I think she was trying to warn Philip, and also kind of like get permission in a way, because remember there have been things that have happened where she has needed to talk to him before she took a certain stance or made a certain move or did a certain thing. She's not comfortable or confident going out and making choices as a person who has something to hide. And I think she was trying to get him to return her call, saying, I'm going to be going out to dinner with someone if you don't call me back. Basically saying, like, I don't know what the hell to do. I don't know if I should say no or yes. I don't know if I should go or not. You know, call me.
Yeah, I think you're right, because she's nervous. She's powering down a drink. She slams a glass of wine and calls Clark/Philip and says, I'm going to be going out. And the way she says it, I'm going out to dinner with a male colleague, which you know is an FBI dude, right? A colleague.
Right.
And she's flustered. She's a little scared of this meeting. And maybe she's just trying to warn him, like you said, warn him, and then she's just trying to do her best with it.
Yeah.
But she Skylar's down that wine. She powers down that couple of glasses of wine. And then she said, the capper is, I love you. So the sad part of that was it was right on the beep, right at the end of the message. Right. Remember that when you'd leave a message and it would cut off right as you got to the good part?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so on the heels of all this, Elizabeth is getting sick. I guess right before this. Elizabeth's not eating because she's not hungry, and this triggers something in William, like, whoa, hold on a second. It starts a whole sort of a diagnosis sequence with him. He's checking her out very closely now.
Yeah, that was the diagnosis power flows, like, you know, yes, no. Diarrhea, yes, no. Did you have a fever earlier? Yes, no. If yes, go here and do that.
Well, you're giggling, but it really shut down Felix. It shut down William's comedic sense. He was really worried at this point.
Yeah.
But he does suggest it may simply be the antibiotic.
Right.
Which we are going to find out what that it is, in fact, that. But Elizabeth wants reassurance that Philip will blame her for Pastor Tim and Alice, because she wants him to be free from this blame and live where you can raise them here to be Americans.
Yep. And then she says, that's what you wanted, always.
Philip says, no, don't worry, don't be like that. And she says, just say yes. It's like you said, it's what you've always wanted. All right, so we'll go back to Adderholt and Martha now, and that's where we heard that beautiful Misty Blue by Dorothy Moore. Mm-hmm. I'll play it at the end of this podcast, Jamie. It's just a really cool song.
Mike, you put together a show so well.
Well, it's just, how could you, there's no editing there. That's just such a great song. I may not even put any show notes, just the words to that song. I read the words to that song on YouTube after I found it and played it, and just I got a chill just reading the words to it and thinking about this episode. Wow. So anyway, we hear that, and it kind of intercuts with a couple of scenes, but it's while Adderholt and Martha are having dinner. It's just a perfect music for the scene. My God. Adderhold admits he's a loner. It's, for me, it's the parties. I'm a loner, and I hate getting introduced to people. And as we see Stan, as they talk, Stan investigates Martha's house. And when poor Adderhold says that, Martha's lost in thought and just says, well, what? Oh, I'm sorry, what did you say? She doesn't even hear him.
Yeah.
Not even paying attention.
And he's like, oh, nothing. But it was, I mean, it was pretty deep.
Yeah, and then they have the perfect editing of all this. It's interlaced with Stan taking photos and searching Martha's drawers, and then they're having an intimate, deep, like you say, deep conversation. Martha says, "You asked if I'm seeing anyone. I'm seeing a married man." Like she's bold now. She's not afraid to tell him that she's standing up for herself.
Right. Yeah. That was so weird. So crazy. I've never done anything like that. I would never do anything like that. But if I ever did, I wouldn't want to tell anybody.
She's essentially overpowering Adderhold because Adderhold has no words for this. He's like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, oh. Yeah. And then Stan searches. He finds the gun and the Kama Sutra. And Martha comes back in. They're cutting back and forth between these scenes with Dorothy Moore, like under soundtrack of all this, just elegantly illustrating it. Martha says, I'm not embarrassed or ashamed. It's simple. There are no false promises or lies. Cut back to Stan searching and Adderhold, go back to them having dinner. Adderhold says, sneaking around doesn't bother you? And she says, no, it's grown up. It's the most honest relationship I've ever had. Pretty serious stuff for a casual little first date between these two.
Yeah, yeah. But I guess it's, you know, it's really interesting if you think about it. Because, you know, she's a really, really extremely different person now than she was.
Yeah. You know? I really like this. I think Martha was talking to herself here. And I mean, Adderhold was the placeholder, but she was just telling herself all this.
I agree with you.
All right, so we cut back to the sick house. Gabriel's asleep, Philip's reading, and Elizabeth is sleeping and dreaming, Jamie.
Yeah.
She's Nadezhda again. She's dreaming of her mother, sick, coughing up blood as she's tending to her. I have to be honest with you, Jamie. I had to do a quick look to make sure, because, you know, I know we've heard Nadezhda before, and I should have remembered that's Elizabeth's name in Russian, but I had to look and make sure this wasn't Nina, because it looked like Nina. She looked like a young Nina.
She kind of looked like she could have been, yeah, like she could have been young Nina. I knew it was Elizabeth because you made fun of me last season for saying Nadezhda. And I tried to say it this episode to try to get it better a little bit. I think I can say it a little bit better now. But yeah, I still butcher it. Let me try it. Nadezhda.
Nadezhda. It's got an H in there. Nadezhda. Nadezhda. Yeah, I don't think you hear the H. But Elizabeth/Nadezhda tells her mother, hush, like Philip, be quiet. Don't say that. You're not going to die. And Mama looks bad, Jamie. Mama does not look healthy here.
Uh-uh.
And then Elizabeth, and back in real time, wakes up. Her fever is apparently about to be broken. I put broken, but I guess we find out a little bit later. She wants to call Paige, and Philip stops her. You'll just worry her. You'll ruin her if you call her right now.
Uh-huh.
And then we see Nina in her cell, and it's almost her turn to dream. So we saw parenthood and dreams in this. Really, really cool. Man, these guys are damn good writers.
Oh, they're amazing. And don't say guys, because that was a lady, and she's incredible.
Well, yeah, everybody. Everybody associated.
I say women are guys, too. You're fine. I just was really shocked that this writer wrote this episode. It's fascinating to me because she's an African American playwright, and a lot of what she's written has been about race. And so I'm surprised. And there's actually another episode she's writing to this season. She's written to for this season, but there's another episode that she wrote earlier in the series as well. And it seems as though the episodes that she writes are very deep kind of emotional episodes.
And who is this writer? Please remind me.
Oh, okay. I'll tell you her name again. Just give me a second. Let me click it. Her name is Tracy Scott Wilson.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
Man, I don't have anything bad to say about this, anything at all in this episode. I just was sad it ended.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God. It went by so fast.
It did. It went by so fast. And my notes are just flowing, easy to take. Last week, I took a billion notes. It took forever to get everything down. And this one just flowed.
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful.
Okay, come back to Oleg and his papa. Igor or Boris?
Igor.
Igor tells him what happened, how Nina got into this trouble she's in. And now Oleg ramps it up. He wants to go see her. And his father says, you'd be associating with a traitor, and I cannot get you out of that kind of trouble. Nobody can.
Yeah. I mean, which, you know, it just makes, I don't know. For me, that line was so great. It said so much that the series is actually about, and actually, I'm getting emotional thinking about it because, you know, sometimes if you write well and if you play your cards right and if you have your scenes all set up and, you know, in a series like this that's just got so much great writing and so much great acting, sometimes you can say something, a phrase, just a few words, like Igor said, that sum up the entirety of the feeling that you should have about the series. And that is it. You know, that is it. It's the fact that these people are just doing everything. They're giving up their lives, you know, to fight for a power structure that would not spare them if it felt threatened.
It would grind them up and spit them out, right?
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
Jamie, help me understand this next part, because here's where Oleg's papa tells him, he makes him a deal of some kind. If I helped her, would you come home? Mm-hmm. And Oleg agrees to this. What was he thinking? Did he just want to fake him out and say, okay, I'm going to try to help her. You just come home and be with mama?
No, I don't think so. I think that he meant it, but I think that either it was too late, you know, for him to help, or he couldn't have an effect. He didn't have the kind of power and influence that it would take to have an effect to help Nina. Or, you know, it was just a clever way of giving us hope and making us feel like, okay, well, maybe this is it. Maybe someone can do something for Nina.
So maybe he, even though he understood the brevity of Nina's crimes, that he just overestimated his power within the system to help her? Because he tells Oleg, if you even associate with her and you get caught, I cannot help you.
Yeah. So
then after that, he suggests, if I give you a deal to help her, would you come home?
Yeah, I think that he just really, you know, he's been wanting Oleg back home for 2 seasons. He wants Oleg home. And so maybe he thought, if I'm really, you know, lucky, if I just take a chance, you know, it's probably one of those things where, why the heck not? Why not just try? Because I can't lose in this instance, right? My son's asking me to achieve something impossible. I'm going to try to achieve the impossible. If I can't, I can't. I don't expect I'll be able to, but if I can, and I extract a promise from him, and by some miracle I can make this thing happen, I'll get my son back.
Yeah, you may be right. Actually, on a little bit of a lighter note, Oleg Costa Ronan was on the Insider podcast, and he was joking about how someone complained that that actor, that whoever's playing Oleg has a bad Russian accent. Why don't you get a real Russian?
That's funny.
And there he is talking on the podcast with a really heavy Russian accent. He's like Russian.
Yes, he's really super duper Russian.
So that was funny.
It was funny.
All right, so Elizabeth in another sleep scene here with William in the sick house. William looks at her and kind of confirms her fever's been broken. But at this point, he still doesn't seem sure whether she's out of the woods. Right. And while she's asleep, he and... Philip have some time to talk. And more depth, more deep conversation here. William asks Philip, how long have you two been together? He tells him 20 years. And William says, well, that must be nice what you have. You're so lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't even realize what it's like to have this job and not have anyone to talk to. Just think about that.
Oh, no. I mean, actually, you and I talked about this like 3 episodes or 2 episodes ago, because when we met William, that came up. And I think it was William who said, you're so lucky to have a partner because not every partnership works out.
Oh, yeah, because his partner didn't work out.
Right.
Well, Philip kind of counters with, well, that's all fine and good, but my daughter's in a bad place because of this job. She could sense what was going on, so we had to tell her.
Yeah.
And William says, nobody sane would do this work.
Yeah.
And they both kind of look over at Elizabeth, and Philip says, she did. She's doing it.
And we both know what that means.
So the next morning, Gabriel wakes up looking better, and Elizabeth wakes up. And William watches them hug. He watches Elizabeth and Philip hug, and it just looks so sad, his look on his face. Like, I have nobody to hug me.
I know. Poor guy. I like him. I like that character. And I think he's in every episode this season.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
He says, Elizabeth, you never had the disease. It was just her bad reaction to the drug. So the antidote was as powerful, potentially, I guess, could have killed her, the antidote.
Yeah, they did. What is it? Antibiotic, right?
Chloramphenicol could have killed her. Looked like it almost did.
Oh.
So then Elizabeth has a different point of view on Tim and Alice. She says, you're right. We cannot kill Tim and Alice. Paige would never get over it. We need to work them.
Uh-huh.
Change of heart for old Elizabeth. And William says, Gabriel looks better, or Gabriel will be better. It looks like the apartment, looks like we killed off all the germs here. He says with bleach, they must have bleached the place.
Yeah, they bleached the place. But he said, get out of here as soon as he's better and don't come back. Continue to pay rent on it so that nobody else can ever live in it, but don't ever come back here.
Yeah, so he's concerned about innocents getting into that apartment and getting sick.
As well he should.
I like that about William. He's got a conscience.
Okay, so he has a conscience when he's forced to have one. Did you hear what he said when Gabriel thanked him early on in the episode? Like when the episode first started and he starts taking care of Gabriel, he's like ministering to him and Gabriel says, thank you. And he says, I was recruited or I was forced or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. I wouldn't be here if I didn't have to be, pal.
Right. Like, believe me, dude, I would have run in the other direction. In fact, I did. And I suggested that they wrap your body in plastic and burn it.
That's right. I forgot about that. So Elizabeth and Philip kind of give a fond goodbye to Gabriel. They talk to him a little bit, and they tell him, we don't want the center to kill Tim and Alice. We're not leaving. We're going to make a deeper connection.
Okay, can I just tell you... Now you're going to think I've been drinking, and I haven't. But Gabriel's face was so freaking beautiful. I don't know what they did to that dude. I don't know if I just have not been able to stand him for all these seasons. I don't know what it is, but his face was so pretty. I wanted to kiss it. He just looks so beautiful this episode.
Yeah, everything about this episode is nice and good and better. Oh, everything's better. Everything's better until the frickin' end of it.
Oh.
It's got the nice song. It's all, it's going to be good. Everything's kind of coming back in line.
Yeah.
Well, Gabriel tells them, if you do that, you'll be living in a burning house. I can't do Gabriel's voice. You'll be living in a burning house if you do that. What a great description of their situation.
I mean, it was fantastic. It was just so vivid. I loved this episode so much. It was beautiful. I mean, actually, this season, honestly, Mike, think about this season. Like, every episode so far has just been crazy.
We're only into 4.
Yeah.
Well, when Gabriel says you'll be living in a burning house, Philip says, what's new? So what's new about that?
Yeah.
And then Gabriel relates to them about how before the war he told himself that he'd be safe if he only did what he was told. And he would ask himself every day, is it going to be today? Is it my turn today? And he's kind of relating to Philip that if you live in this burning house, you're not going to have an easy life. But it's your choice if you want to do that, and I'll help the center get to where they need to be to accept that.
Yeah, that was it was rough. I found myself looking at Elizabeth's face. Every time the camera returned to her, I was just looking at her face because, it's true. And I don't know how these people are not exhausted. And somehow, Philip seems to have regained a little bit of his composure, and his energy toward life at this point. But honestly, it was such a great turn of phrase, you'll be living in a burning house. It's really expressive and accurate, I think.
Well, we get a little bit more happiness and fun before the frickin' roof falls in. But the Jennings get home, Paige hugs them. Please don't do that to me again. I'm not able to stand up to this on my own, pretty much, I think is what she was saying.
And she was saying she didn't know what to do or who to call.
She did great, though. She really did great with Stan.
Yeah, she did.
Henry's playing on the computer, and he asks them about Epcot. Like, well, maybe next week, Henry.
And Paige... she says, not now. And then he's like, "You every time you say that, like, come on."
Yeah. And Paige kind of smiles. So it's the three of them now and Henry. It's like the three in the know and then Henry the innocent. Pretty funny. And they go bowling, and Elizabeth makes, what, six strikes in a row? And what is Paige asks her if it's, did you learn that in your Russian spy training?
And she says, essential Russian spy training.
Vital part of training. Inner Natasha and Boris. Bullwinkle voice. Pretty funny. They have a nice laugh together.
I like that because that's the first time that we have seen Paige have any kind of lightness about this situation.
Yeah, just some relief, even if it's for a frickin' 15 seconds.
Yep.
And Elizabeth, too. She needed some brightness.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, Nina gets some brightness here, Jamie. She dreams, and this ghostly beam of light comes into the setting. And I knew there was trouble when I saw this frickin' beam of light.
Me too.
That's not natural. They're not going to make us believe that's really natural. That everything's so good that the...
Right.
She cries with happiness over her letter, which apparently indicates freedom. She gets two tickets to paradise for her and Anton. And dreamy music underneath it. I don't have that ready.
I'm like, stop. Wait.
What?
What is wrong with you?
What? That's what it looked like.
God, I was ready for you to be like disappointed, but serious. I wasn't expecting you.
All right, Jamie, get a grip on yourself. I don't understand your point. You thought I was going to make fun of this?
I didn't realize that you were going to make fun of this theme.
I'm just kind of describing it. She has two freaking tickets.
All right, keep going.
And there is dreamy music. And she's standing there with Anton. What the hell is so funny?
Because you were like, so you'd have to play it back because you were like, the beam of light, wrong. Like you knew something was wrong when they had the beam of light and then the two tickets to paradise.
Oh, well, I knew it was a fake out, but I'm just describing what they did.
Which put that song in my head, and then like I'm hearing that song, two tickets to paradise while you're describing this other stuff.
Oh, you're hearing Eddie Money?
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Well, then they walk outside and it's a beautiful world of like nice white snow and sunlight, but then she wakes up, Jamie.
It was so awesome, though. It was so awesome, though. I mean, because for a second, I really, really believed it. I was like, dude came through, you know? He got the tickets.
Yeah, Papa Boris.
Yeah, or Boris Igor, got the tickets. We were good. We were good, right? Igor. Yeah, his real name's Boris. So I thought Igor got the tickets. I thought she's free. You know, they're going back to America. I don't know how they're going to make it work. Maybe they're going to make Nina spy for Russia again. But at least dude gets to go home. And then I was thinking, it can't be like some sort of weird setup where, you know, they shoot him in the head once they walk out of the hangar. This is it. Like, you know, life's about to be good. And then...
Well, before she uses those two tickets to paradise, she's got to go through the Russian TSA, Jamie. Down in the basement, that's one first bad sign. Second bad sign is she walks past a damn mop. Now, that mop is there for a reason. And she goes past that mop, and she stands in front of that dude, and he reads her the sentence. And then she receives the sentence in 15 seconds. Now, Jamie, they discuss this on the Insider show. Did you listen to the Insider show yet, Vulture?
No. I always wait until after we record.
It's a true story, this little act with Nina. That's how the Russians sentenced and executed people. They felt it was a merciful way to kill people.
I thought that was exactly right. I thought exactly that.
So they talked to Weisberg and Fields, and they said it was the kindest possible way to let her go. And that's what the Russians thought at the time, was just a quick, easy, simple, you know, boom, you're out, you're done. I thought the shot, I mean, shooting somebody in the head in a room, in a small room, would be relatively dangerous for the other people.
Right.
Because they had the one guy behind her shot her, and there's another dude standing in front of her.
Right.
But the bullet, it sounded like it was a silenced or muffled shot, so it was probably a little bit reduced silencer on the gun to reduce the power of it, but she gets wiped out in one quick shot.
Yeah. It was so cool. I thought that it was really dramatic seeming, you know, leading up to the pronouncement of her fate. I really thought that they were going to commute her sentence. I thought that I really did, because it sounded so serious. I thought, oh, it's going to be the opposite.
Yeah, me too. I mean, we have the perfect viewpoint of the armchair quarterback after, in retrospect. But at the time, I was with you. I thought, oh wow, they're gonna let her go.
Yeah.
Good old Igor came through. Yeah. But the Fields, Joel and Joe got this from a book, a book you can literally get on Kindle, Jamie, for free, and I'll put a link to it. It's by Sergei Kostin, and a book called Farewell. And it was a story of a Russian spy who the French found, the French people, and that spy gave the French a bunch of information, and the French then gave it to the West. And that's how Fields and Weisberg found out about all these intimate things about the way that they executed spies.
Wow.
So anyway, poor Nina, that was it. We know that this date was March 18th, 1983. So we've only progressed through 2 weeks, this whole four episodes.
Wow.
Right? It started like March 3rd or March 2nd?
Yeah, I think so. March 3rd.
But Nina was somewhat redeemed, I think, in this season four, Jamie.
Oh, for sure.
I'm glad this is a theme of the Americans. It's actually a relatively strong theme, that people can have redemption.
Yes, that's true. And, you know, come back from... And, you know, but this... Again, this is a really... I think that Nina, in particular, is somebody who was really and truly redeemed. I mean, she was redeemed. You know, but they... A lot of these characters are very human. They're not like contrived characters who have dark sides and light sides that are very starkly defined, and then, you know, they're either one or the other. They are very nuanced you know, kinds of characters, and they do inexplicable things that cause you to have to really try to get inside their headspace and understand why they would make some of the decisions they make. And I think that that's a hallmark of brilliant storytelling.
Yeah, I wonder if they're getting so good at this. Like, can 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 13 get better and better and better? I mean, is there a peak and we're going to trail off? How can they keep making this thing better?
I don't know, but they do. I mean, you know, each season as a whole has been better than the season that preceded it. And in this particular season, each episode has gotten better. Although, I don't know. I mean, for me, episode 3 is a real highlight. But yeah, episode 4, it surpasses it because of, you know, the ending. It was just so well done. It really, really, really was. I think that that the death of Nina was so beautifully handled. And I think that Annette Mahindru, the actress who played Nina, has to feel really proud and really satisfied with that character's arc, her life and her death and everything.
It's funny they said, well, not funny, but they said she... She broke down in tears when she found out that she was going to die.
Yeah.
And I guess she found out in October, right before they started filming the season.
Wow.
And she had to have her mother tell her, "You're not Nina," over the phone. "You're not Nina. It's okay. You're not Nina." And she's Annette thought, "Well, it feels such like a personal death that it was, you know, making her break down into tears."
Right. Oh gosh, that's so sad.
So they asked her if she would have changed anything about her character, and she said, "I wish she wasn't so tragic." But I guess some people just are, and you can't do anything about it. She said she wished she could have settled down with a family, with Anton, or maybe, you know, somebody. And but that wasn't Nina's story.
It wasn't.
She also said she wished Oleg would have seen her, have been able to come see her one last time.
Yeah. But, you know, I think it's... oh, God, that just made me so sad. I think it's better, you know, it's more poetic the way that it happened, because it really is a huge delineation, you know, between the life that she had and the person that she was and the person she became when she got around Anton.
All right, Jamie, let's let Dorothy Moore give us some more beautiful music as we close this baby out. Next week is Clark's Place, Jamie, 405. That's going to wrap it up for chloramphenicol, number 404. How do people reach you on the internet?
I'm on Twitter, and I'm at Lord Girly.
And I'm at Scathing Tweets. So any final thoughts, Jamie?
Just can't wait for next week.
All right, I'll talk to you then.
All right.
Bye.
Bye, Mike. Such a long, long time. Looks like I'd get you off of my mind, but I can't. Just the thought of you, just the thought, my love, my whole world.